Monster Man, episode 285, Eagle to Fish, Giant. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we're continuing our journey through the Animals section of Creature Catalog, the 1986 supplement for Basic Dungeons & Dragons. Before we do that, though, I've got some news. Quite a lot of news, actually. First off, I've got a scenario in an anthology of new scenarios coming out. It's called Dissident Whispers. It's a charity anthology in support of bail funds. You can find more details about the project and link in the show notes. I've seen a lot of the other scenarios that have been created for it, and they are amazing. Frankly, I'm feel a little intimidated about my little goof of a scenario being included with some of the heavy hitters in here. I think you're going to enjoy it, so you know, check it out, and of course the money goes toward a good cause. Unrelatedly, Melsonian Arts Council hosted a Troika pamphlet scenario jams. The idea was that you would write a scenario for a Troika and format it as a threefold pamphlet. And I thought that sounded like a fun challenge, so I've done that. My scenario is now up, and you can go and download it for free. If you're interested in checking out either of those projects, just click on the links below, or I'll have them on my Twitter if you follow me there. All right, now, most of the animals in today's episode are things that we have covered in previous episodes of the show, so I'm going to go through them very quickly. But hopefully I should have some new things to say about one or two of them. First off, we have the eagle. You got your normal eagle, and you got your great eagle. Great eagles are intelligent. They actually have like a little bit of a culture and society, which is interesting. It's interesting to me that eagles, you know, because they're associated with kind of monarchy and nobility, they get this reputation. In fantasy stories, they're good guys, right? Obviously, you know, most notably in The Lord of the Rings. I feel like looking at eagles would tend to dissuade you of this view, and in Old Norse literature, eagles are presented as birds of ill omen, but usually they're seen as you know, symbols of power and majesty. I think some bad guy eagles, vicious, cruel scavengers, could be fun. Then we got eels. You got your electric eel, which has a fun mechanic where the damage that it does is based on your distance from it, right? Like how intense the charge is. You got your giant eel, your eel, giant, and I mean, you know, that's pretty much what it says in the tin. And you got your weed eel, which blends in with the seaweed that it lives among. And you get this kind of camouflage coloration in a number of real eel species, although I don't think you get the same extent that, like, there are species of seahorse that have, you know, fins and other protrusions that sort of look like the leaves of seaweed. I don't know that you get that with eels. Every time I see a reference to eels lately, I think of a Twitter account that I follow, Surprised Eel Historian. And this is someone who I think has just finished a PhD. Yes, the account is now called Surprised Eel Historian PhD, about eels in medieval England. You know, eels actually were an important part of the medieval English economy, and presumably of the medieval economy in a lot of other places, in the nearby city of Ely. Literally Eel Island. There's an annual eel festival, which involves, you know, all kinds of eel dishes, a giant eel puppet being paraded through the streets, and an eel tossing contest. It wasn't held this year, of course, because of the pandemic, but I'm sure that previous year's champions have all been tossing eels in their hearts. Next, we got the elk, giant. It's an elk, but larger than a regular elk. I mean, it's fine, I guess. I think we talked about this before. Essentially, this is the Irish deer that was in a previous monster book. It's fine. It's hard to see the circumstances under which it would come up, but whatever. And then we've got what I think is the real meat of this episode, which is the fish, giant. Now, there are several interesting things about this entry, and several things that I think are a bit curious. The first curious thing is the beginning of the entry. Now, again, many entries in the creature catalog where they refer to a particular, like, broad category of monsters, so, like, fish, they'll have a set of references at the beginning of the section that tell you where other fish are found in the D&D books that have been previously published. So at the beginning of the fish, giant section, we get an entry that tells us we can look in the expert set for stats for bass, rockfish, and sturgeon. Maybe I'm missing something, but, you know, you're Frank Mentzer, or whoever. You're sitting there writing out your monster list for the expert set, and you're pretty pleased with it. And you take it down the hall to editorial, and finally, Gary Gygax looks up at you and he says, Frank, this is a great monster section, but unfortunately, it's a little bit too long. You know, we just don't have the space to fit it into the book. we're going to have to cut some of these fish and publish them in a later supplement. I know you worked hard on them, and I'm sorry, but don't worry, they will see the light of day eventually. We've only got room for 3 fish comma giant in this expert set, and I'm going to need you to choose your 3 favorites. What do you reckon, Frank? I'm looking at the piranha comma giant here. I mean, I think that's a pretty fun giant fish. And you look back at Gary and you go, no. Clearly the most important fish in a world of fantasy adventure are bass, rockfish, and, need I say it, sturgeon. That decision is obscure to me. Anyway, in this one, we additionally get the catfish comma giant and the piranha comma giant. Now, we've talked about the catfish comma giant in the past. The catfish comma giant is a staple of kind of Midwestern and Southern American folklore, and I believe that catfish do get to be pretty big, although nowhere near as big as the catfish comma giant. You know, there's something about catfish. I think it's the way that the shape of their mouths and their eyes and the barbels dangling down makes them look, you know, they look like they have mustaches, and they look mournful. They look sad to our faces. A lot of fish have expressions that, if we read them as human expressions, seem startled or shocked. I mean, the catfish looks lugubrious. However, the real standout in this section, I feel, is the piranha comma giant. It says that up to 8 piranhas comma giant can attack a single character at a time. I'm surprised to find that that is not a general rule for how many creatures can attack somebody at once. Maybe the idea is that because it's in the water, you could also be being attacked by, you know, one from above and one from below, I guess is the theory of the thing. I don't really know. The piranha comma giant for me falls a little bit into the spider comma giant category, or maybe the wasp comma giant, by which I mean that I don't know that piranhas are a monster that becomes scarier when they get bigger. It's kind of that, would you rather fight 100 duck-sized horses or 1 horse-sized duck? Question. If I had to be attacked by 8 5-foot-long piranhas or an equivalent mass of regular-sized piranhas, I feel like they're both scary. I would not like to do either of them, don't get me wrong. But I feel like the equivalent mass of regular-sized piranhas is actually the more frightening option. And I guess that this is a mechanical problem where being swarmed by large numbers of not terribly threatening opponents in D&D after a while is a tedious exercise in dice rolling and chance, right? If there are a bazillion piranhas attacking you, eventually some of them are going to require the 20s they need to hit you, and you're going to get nickel and dimed. But that's not dramatic in the same way as it is to be having these big piranhas take big chunks out of your studded leather armor. So I wonder if there's a system impetus that tells us, you know, conceptually this idea is scarier, yes, but actually when you play it out, big numbers are kind of dull. I don't know if we have swarm type rules at this point in the game's history, but it's certainly the case that, you know, certainly from 3rd edition on, large numbers of small opponents are often aggregated into single stat blocks called swarms. And I don't know if that level of abstraction is occurring. Anyway, it's not that there's anything wrong with the piranha comma giant, I just wonder if giantizing piranhas actually makes them more frightening. I guess the idea is that they're freshwater, whereas most of your large, aggressive, bitey type fish that you might get in this game are saltwater, so, you know, sharks and barracudas and what have you. I assume we're going to have sharks later in this chapter. I'm kind of surprised that there aren't more fish, generally speaking, although we are going to have a number of fish in later parts of this section, including next episode. So, for example, the gargantua is a giant fish, but it is not in the fish, giant category, presumably because it is not a giant version of a real-world fish species, although it sort of is, so I don't know what's going on with that. Anyway, speaking of the gargantua, that is one of the monsters that we're going to take a look at in our next episode. True to my promise to bomb my way through the animal section pretty quickly, because most of these we've done already, we're going to start with the frog, giant, poisonous, and end up with the hawk. But before we do that, we've got a special episode coming up. That's going to be about dragons, not dragons in the folklore and mythology of Europe, but in the folklore and mythology of the Far East, an area in which I'm not an expert, but I found out a lot of interesting stuff. So, I mean, if you want to join me on my journey of discovery, that's going to happen next time on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.